Hey, what's up,
Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Good afternoon. For the very first of its kind, the Bozilla has reached Blog Talk Radio on his own. Not somebody else's channel, my channel. I want to thank you guys for tuning in today. Today, I'm going to be talking about myself, the book that I have written with my ghostwriter, Danielle Andrews, and this is going to be a book talking about my life. First of all, I'm going to describe it as a book that is a must-read for everybody, I would say, who has, especially men, who have sons that need that turnaround. Just because you have made mistakes in your past, and I'm talking to the fathers now, just because you have made mistakes in your past, doesn't mean that you're not, as I say, can bounce back. Because after you read my book, you will be like, oh, wow, this man did a lot of stuff. And trust me, I did. There were things when I had it edited, and me and my ghostwriter was talking, it made me cry again. Because sometimes I sit back and think, how could I be that darn stupid to do the things I did in this book? For one, I talked about being in school, high school, Meadowdale High School, Dayton, Ohio. I played football. I was a ladies' man in high school. I know it's hard to say, you know, being in high school, you don't know nothing about being a ladies' man, but I was. I tried to keep women around me. I had one girlfriend, and I thought that was my main girlfriend. But I did things, you know, how all boys do. We always think we were the man. For a fact, I know I was the man because, you know, I played football. I was bigger than almost the average person in school. I was tall. I was real big. I was in the weight room. You know, when you come from being a little fat, stubby kid, growing up in elementary school, junior high, and you never really had girls looking at you. You know, when you're a little fat kid, you didn't have girlfriends, you know, because people always, you're fat, you don't have no boy, you don't need a girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, my dad wasn't around. I didn't have a real good father figure until I became in junior high school, where my mother remarried Harold Woods. I had my grandfather. He was there. But, you know, once you become an age, elderly, he couldn't do the things that a father should do. You know, I helped him in the backyard. He taught me how to cut grass and stuff like that. He worked hard. He was a man that did welding and stuff like that. So he had problems with his eyes. So he couldn't do things that your normal grandfather would do. You know, he did teach me a lot of stuff about being a man. He always told me, when you become a man, become a husband, the wife is your responsibility. You know, I seen my grandfather at work, and he come home, he turned his check right over to his wife, to my grandmother, with no questions asked. And if I could have done that, I would have been a way better husband, a way better father. I'm not saying I was a bad father or a bad husband, but there were things that if I would have followed the footsteps my grandfather left for me, and he left them for me to do, I would have been a way better person. But I have learned, and that's why that book is called Conviction to Redemption. So I started out there, my father being Samoan, my mother being African-American, so I was mixed. There were things that I knew that now that I did not know then as far as my family heritage, my bloodline. I was Heinz 57. You know, everybody talk about, you know, I'm mixed. I was that mixed kid and I didn't even know. Come back to find out that I have an Indian tribe here in North Carolina. That's part of my bloodline. I was African-American, of course. I was Caucasian, Samoan, I had all kinds of bloodlines in me. You know, mostly most people do. I'm not a pure African American. I'm not pure African. But I did have it in me. I do have a little bit, believe it or not, I do have a little bit of, I was just saying, people wore the kilts. Wore the kilts and stuff like that, Scottish. And I know that because I, you know, come to find out, watching, listening to my cousins, I just found cousins on Facebook. And come to find out that they did that thing that you can pay for $49 now and check your DNA, Ancestry.com. And they found out that our bloodline runs through that. And I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't even know that. But that's just my little story of that part. Then, you know, I get to junior high. My stepfather, at that point, I thought was very, very mean. And more, I'll tip more on that here in a second. And I don't, you know, he was mean. You know, I came from a place where I was the only boy. It was my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mother. So my grandfather was older. So, you know, he didn't do too much because, you know, I'm the boy of the house. I'm the man of the house. So I didn't take advantage of that. But as far as the discipline aspect of it, I was spoiled. So I got almost everything that I wanted. I'm talking as far as clothes, money. If I wanted to go somewhere and I didn't have the money, I look at my grandma, like, Grandma, I want to go this. I want to go to this concert. I want to go see this. I want to go see that. And they go down to the bank account and get the money and get it for me so I can go. I didn't have to work. You know, their thing was, you're going to school, you're playing football, so we want you to go to school and play football. So I did not have to work. All my best friend, Kirk Scarce, he worked ever since he was, my God, junior high, he was working. So, you know, I didn't understand that. You know, you sit back and you see people, your friends and stuff, going to work, working at Patterson. When you went to Patterson, you had co-ops. I know nothing about no darn co-ops. I went to school. My only co-op was going to football. That's what I knew, football in the weight room. And that was it. And going to see my girlfriend on the weekends. That was my co-op. So you think about it. I was in the pipeline, but not in a pipeline. I was in a pipeline as far as the way that my parents, my dad wasn't around, my mother worked two jobs, and so I was raised by my stepfather, he was told by my grandparents, we have him, don't worry about him. But I'm living in another man's house, but they're telling him, don't say nothing to him, don't discipline him. We have him. Do not worry about him. But they're in a whole different city than where I was living at. So see, I'm in a pipeline then, and I didn't even know that because the simple fact is my grandparents loved me so much that I could get anything I want. I did never do anything wrong. I'm not saying that I was the perfect kid in the world because I was. No kid is perfect, but I was at the point where if I wanted something, if I said, you know what, I want the moon, I bet you they would find a way to get up there to get it for me. And you take advantage of that when you're a kid, when you're in high school, junior high, because everybody else was working. You're like, I ain't got to work. I'm going to lay here on my butt and play these video games that I got. I get video games every Christmas. I get new clothes. Hold on, let me tell you this. I'm sorry to cut you off. I cut myself off again. I remember Air Jordans came out. I forget the year, but I was in ninth grade. I had Air Jordans. Air Jordans. And I wasn't even working. I had the red, white, and black ones. I had those. I had red and white ones. I had two pairs of Jordans my freshman year of high school, which was considered junior high because I was Fairport. And we didn't have high school freshmen in with the high schools yet. So I had that. So I'm walking around with $100-some pair of gym shoes. Everybody else is not wearing those. I'm wearing those. And people are like, "Why? How you get them, George? How you get those?" Man, I just got them. My mom and my grandmother got them for me. And, you know, and I never thought about it, but, you know, I'm setting myself up for failure because I was like, you know what? I got to do nothing. I just got to look cute, play football, and I'm going to get everything I want. I set myself up for failure because I didn't have that go get them attitude to go out there and get a job and start working for what's mine. So now I found out now as I get older that's another part is my problem now, because I don't have the work ethic as some people do, because it wasn't instilled with me, because I was the only grandson at the time, at the age, I was the youngest. I was the youngest grandson, and so living at home with my grandparents, so, you know, my grandfather didn't have no sons, so he had two girls, and so I was like his son. So I didn't have to do too much of nothing but cut the grass and do that type of stuff. So, again, I was in my own pipeline because I put myself in it. Not because my parents were bad, not because I was in a bad household, because I wasn't. It's because I chose to be that way because I didn't have to do nothing. So that's my fault. So now as I talk about the pipeline for what these kids are going through, they're going through stuff way worse than I went through. So I tell people now, please take care of your kids. Take care of your loved ones. Tell them that you love them. Because right now, I wish I could go back in time and change that boy back in the ninth grade. Steven, you need to show up and show out and get yourself together. I'm flunking school. I'm getting D's and F's on my grade card, but guess what? I'm still getting to go to the movies. I'm still getting to go out and play. How's that learning me anything? There's no consequences. If I had consequences back then, maybe I wouldn't have gone to prison now. And we'll talk about that later. But I didn't have any consequences as far as messing up in school. You know, how many kids you know now get D's and F's on their grade card and they're still allowed to go out and play? You know, real kids, they said, you get a grade card like that, you're getting a whooping. You know, it wasn't even that about that. I didn't have to deal with that. We'll just try to do better next time. But that set me up for failure. I love my mom. I love my grandparents. God bless their souls. But they thought they were doing me a favor by doing this because I was the baby at the time. I was the baby. Out of my two cousins and my sister, I didn't know about my sister yet, but that's a whole other story. We'll get to that later on, too. At that time, I was the only child, and so I was the baby. And so could nobody tell Annette Woods' baby anything, because that's what I was. I was the baby. And if you think about it, that is setting me up for failure. I can't blame nobody but myself, because I can blame my mother on that, too, because she didn't have to treat me so pretty. She treated me right. She got me right, but she also was a little soft on me. So when she got married to Harold Woods, he had kids, but his kids were grown. So I come in as a boy that just came into becoming to eighth grade. Now, eighth grade, I'm about to be ninth grade because high school is about to start ninth grade, eighth grade. So I'm here. So I'm a little fat, round boy. Eighth grade, and I come from Springfield, Ohio, a little country town. It's a city, but it's a little country city. It's not that much to do. Things close up about 7:30, 8 o'clock. And I come to Dayton, Ohio. That's big city. So I come to Dayton, Ohio, and I'm shocked by the stuff that I see. As far as, I'm going to be honest with you. The girls look so much different in Dayton, Ohio than they do in Springfield. The girls in Dayton, Ohio look like movie stars compared to the girls in Springfield, Ohio, because it's a fast-paced city. And these girls are doing things that I thought you had seen in porno movies, and I didn't even see the porn yet. So when you see this, you're caught by, I'm shocked. I'm like, oh, my God, is this what it's like? And so I'm like, and then, you know, start losing weight and stuff like that, because, you know, the baby fat's coming off. I'm playing football, and I'm starting to get into the little bit. Harold Woods got me to lifting weights. I'm lifting weights and stuff like that. He's doing stuff that a dad should do, but he stepped up to do it. But I still didn't respect him, because I'd be the first time I was going to say, hey, look, man, you're not my dad. You can't tell me not to do that. And what would I do? Call my grandma. He wanted me to do this, and he said this to me, and she get on the phone and call him. Don't say nothing to him and all that type of stuff. And he's not going to disrespect her, because that's my mom's mother, and that's his wife. And my mom was like, don't say nothing to him. I take care of it. And Once again, there's the pipeline. A man is trying to teach me the right way, and people are stepping in the way. So, here we go. Now I'm beginning to finally get into myself as I'm starting to fit into my body as a man, starting to get that man look to me. So, you know, getting a little mustache, a little beard, a little goatee and stuff like that, you know. Little girls start looking at you different now because, you know, I'm not that little fat boy from back in the day. Now I'm really becoming, I'm working out, so I'm starting to get kind of little muscle tone. Not much muscle tone, but, you know, I look better than I did. And so now I see myself, and now I see, you know what, and girls are talking to me, and they're giving me the phone number and all that type of stuff. Oh, my God, I'm girls talking to me? Really? So I'm talking back. I say, okay, so I thought, so it's pretty cool. So I get my little girlfriend and stuff. We start going to the movies and all that type of stuff. You know, that's when you start getting your first little kiss and start first little feel a girl up and all that type of stuff. You know, you didn't know what she was doing, but you're just like, oh, my God, seriously, this is how this is? This is awesome. My God, what have I been missing? So now I'm getting my first taste of love and sex. And I'm like, wow, this is what this is. So becoming a person that I was, that I am now, I had to go through all that to become the man that I am now. As far as high school football, you know, high school, I'm not going to tell you no more about that. You have to read the book. High school football, college football, a little bit of semi-pro football, professional wrestling, bodyguarding, a bodyguard for Tupac Shakur, Detroit's Most Wanted, MC Breed, God rest his soul. We did a little bit for TLC. We did a little bit for Destiny Child, when Beyonce, when she was with Destiny Child. I did stuff for Usher when he was a little bitty dude. He wasn't what he is now. Little bitty, skinny little kid running around stage. That's Usher. So I was with Usher. We did stuff for Usher. Naughty by Nature. We did something for them, security for them, the concert in Dayton, Ohio. Many rock bands I've done concerts for. Metallica, Guns N' Roses. Not Guns N' Roses. Yeah, Guns N' Roses when Kiss was here. We did, what's the name of that other group? I can't think of that group right now. But all White Zombie. Metallica. White Zombie. We did all kinds of heavy metal bands, some country western bands, Garth Brooks, just all kinds of stuff we've done. But I tell you, I wouldn't change it for all the money in the world, because I would never have a story as I have a story now. Like I said, I can't tell you too much more on my story, but I can tell you this, the book is going to keep through something. It's going to keep you very, very entertained. And it's going to make you understand who I am and the stuff that I do. As of right now, my name is Stephen Bolo. I have a 20-year-old daughter, Denise Marie. She lives in North Carolina with her mother. I live in Columbus, Ohio. I am separated. I know a lot of people will think that's crazy, but I'm separated. Been married, we've been 23 years today. Or yesterday. 23 years yesterday. We separated over different, just grew our, we kind of grew our separate ways. That's a whole nother story. She's been by my side from all through the stuff I've done. Like I said, from going to prison. That's in the book too. That's why it's called Conviction to Redemption, because I was accused of some stuff I did not do. I did do some things. But the major stuff that they said I did not do. I was pushing, a little bit of weight, bring a little bit of substances, and I'll say some substances into the prison system. and got caught, got snitched on. I know I got snitched on and got caught. But that was just a little piece of the puzzle. There's some more things that happened that got me, could have got me up to 15 years in prison. And I took the deal and got 5 years and ended up getting early release, got out 22 months. No, I didn't snitch. I just had one hell of a lawyer, Dennis Gump, Dayton, Ohio. Look him up. He's a good lawyer. But I that right there, I'm telling you, that is something that will shape the world when I went to prison. Because people who know me, and the people who read my book, and the people who know me on Facebook, and the people who know me, they know Stephen Bobo as the guy who laughs and has fun and jokes, a big kid, is an Oakland Raider fan through and through, and loves his daughter, has friends, and just a good around guy. But when I tell people I went to prison, the first thing they say, not Bobo. No, not him. Yeah, me. I was one of the dudes who said, you know what? I went to prison because, you know what? I was stupid as hell. That's what I did, stupid as hell, I went to prison. But I couldn't have gone to prison. I had to go to prison to do what I do now. Because my story is that now I'm the guy who's trying to help people in prison. I was a prison guard. Yes, I was a prison guard. And I tell you this, I thought I was God. You hear me? I thought I was God when I was in prison. I've said that to people when I was a prison guard. I mean, count time. Cut the lights out. I mean, you better do what I say, man. You know I am. I'm God. And I would say that. I'm God. Really? So, guys, guess what? I'm come see you here in about another 2-3 months. I'm come see you, and I'm going to show you who God is. 2-3 months, I was coming out of work. And there was a sheriff and a state trooper sitting up there in front of the prison. Mr. Bobo, put your hands behind your back. And that's the end of that story. I'm not going to tell you no more about that. You have to buy the book to read it. And read it. But I tell you, people, this right here is the utmost truth that I have to say. You read the book, your mouth is going to drop. Because it's stuff that I've done to this day. I still do not know how I walked away from it. From car accidents that I ran over a fire hydrant and hit a tree, and they were looking for me. When the police and the fire department came, they were looking for me. Like, where is he at? I was sitting outside on the sidewalk talking to people. Oh, that was me. He's like, how'd you get? I was in a Ford Focus. It had no more front end, wrapped around the tree. But I walked out. Only thing I got is a. The airbag burned on my arm. That's the only thing I got. Nothing but God. Because he told me then, do you hear me now? And that's my slogan through the whole book. You'll keep seeing the little slots in the book. Do you hear me now? Because those are hear me now moments. My ghostwriter, my public relations on my book, Danielle Andrews, she calls that, can you hear me now moment. Because that was God trying to tell me something. Again, I wasn't listening. Man, getting shot at Shears grocery store on James H. McGee. Getting shot in the leg. Do you hear me now? You know, that could have ricocheted. You know, 25 is just ricochet. 22 is, I mean, just ricochet on bones. And sometimes people get more killed by a 25 than do a 9. But I got shot by a 25 and just stopped and just looked at it like, called him all kinds of words. We're not going to say that word right now. But said all kinds of words like, man, really? You just shot me? For real? I was working loss prevention, and I stopped him for stealing some food, stealing steaks, and got shot in the leg. He shot me in the leg. But people, I'm telling you, God has been so great in my life, and I was too dumb to see the blessings he gave me. He gave me a beautiful daughter. Denise Marie is my heart. 20 years old, but you know what? Did not respect that. I did not respect that because I was still living Bo. That's who I was living, Bo. I wasn't living right. If I was living for my daughter, I'd still be in North Carolina with my family. But I wasn't. So I take blame for us, me and my wife splitting up. To a point, yes. Because I could have been a way better husband, a way better man than I am. I'm a way better person than I am now. I'm 100% way better man than I was then. But you know what? I had to go through all this to be able to speak in prisons and to be able to speak to these kids. And let's talk about that. The next little chapter of my life is my new adventure other than my book. It's called In the School to Prison Pipeline. And that's something that everybody knows has heard about it. And I want to be the one that can help stop it. And I mean stop it. I know we're never going to be able to end it completely, but let's get the monkey wrench and put a dent in it and block it a little bit. Let's help these kids be able to get a fresh start in life. Those who are in the juvenile system, or the ones who have parents that are in prison, and you are in the system as far as what you want to call it. I can't think what it's called right now. The houses where they have to go live. Not halfway houses. You have other parents. They're not your parents, but they're people who just foster kids. And that's because your parents are in prison, or parents are on narcotics and on drugs and stuff like that. These kids are in the pipeline because they're not going to get a fair shake in the world. And there's a lot of these kids who need the positive atmosphere and the positive talking to, because that's why I said, if I didn't go through stuff I went through as I was growing up, who would listen to me now? How could I go to a prison camp and talk to them about getting your life together, getting your life right with your kids? How am I going to do that if they've never said, well, you've never been in prison, how would you know? Yes, I have, sir. I've been on both sides of the fence. I've been the guard who told you to go lay down, and I'm the one who's right there by you fixing a break with you. So I can talk to you about anything you want to talk about. So let me talk to these kids. Let me help them. Come in September, I will be here in Ohio at the courthouse, at the state house, talking in front of the state, talking about all kinds of stuff. There's a whole bunch of groups going to be here. They're talking about the abortion law. They're talking about this. They're talking about that. I'm the one who's talking about the pipeline. So that's what I'm doing, because these are what these kids need to hear. People need to hear. I just want to say, please tell your kids you love them, because they love you. They might be hard-headed. Lord knows who I know kids are hard-headed. My kid hard-headed was hard-headed as hell. We got 90 seconds left, guys. It's about time. I didn't think I was going to talk this long. I wasn't supposed to, but I got to get off. I'll be booking another show probably here in another two or three weeks. I want to let this fill out there for a while, but I want to tell you guys, thank you for calling in. You called in. Please leave messages. Talk to me. Get back in contact with me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Stephen Bobo, StevenBobo. Look me up. Got 60 seconds. I want to say thank you guys for calling in and looking me up. I have my phone number. Also, you guys can call me 614-425-9927. That's my personal cell phone number for the pipeline and for the book. So please call me if you guys have any questions. Thank you for tuning in. I love y'all. God bless. Have a great day.